Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast brought to you by Netroots Radio for millennials, Gen Xers, people of that sort. And it is Saturday, September 9th, 2017. We were off last week. Sorry about that. We're back. And lots to talk about, as usual. First things first, there's a big old hurricane south of Florida, bearing down on Florida, where I have lots of family, pretty most of my family, except for my mom that just moved here, basically, is down right in the path. They're safe and hunkered down, and we have been through lots and lots of hurricanes, including Andrew, so they're not panicked. They're just, you know,
they're Floridians.
Yeah, they're doing what they got to do. I try to explain to people, it's like earthquakes or wildfires in California or, you know, blizzards. And if you lived in Colorado your whole life, you know what to do. It doesn't mean it's not dangerous, but I mean, you've been there, done that, you know how to prepare.
Well, so I guess I hear you, but I don't live in Florida. I've never lived in the path of a hurricane,
right?
You know, or tornadoes. I don't live in Oklahoma.
Right.
Lived on the West Coast in Colorado my whole life. And I guess my question for you is, this is the one that hit Texas, and then this one, this is a lot. And it's kind of unusual. Is that right?
It is and it isn't. There are... I remember like 92, they only talk about Andrew, but that was a busy year for hurricanes too. There were quite a few. And then there'll be a lull for 5, 6, 7, sometimes 10 years. And then there'll be another year where there's like 4 or 5 hurricanes, 3 or 4 of them making landfall in the U.S. So climate change is, I think, definitely part of it. There's also just shifting weather patterns, changes in the jet stream, changes in El Nino and La Nina. And there's a whole bunch of factors that go into it, but it's an active year and it might be an active cycle for the next 3, 4 years, meteorologists say. But they're never really sure how it's going to go down until it happens. I think they did predict this year was going to be a very active year, but I think they said the same thing last year and it wasn't. So you just never know.
And for people who live in the hurricane path, I was talking to a lady at work about this, and she was saying that, because of exactly what you just said, people that live in the path of these hurricanes often don't take the evacuation notices and the threat very seriously, because so often they're asked to evacuate and they do, and then nothing happens, and
yeah,
they're stuck in traffic for 3 days. And
well,
it's,
you,
you
yeah,
know,
you have
they
to
just
have,
sort of get to this point where it's like, oh, fuck, they said this again.
You have to have enough experience that you've gone through all of that. But I can tell you, yeah, like in the 10 or so years leading up to Andrew, every year we had a close call, right? There was a big hurricane. It looked like it was coming right for Miami, and then it just curved at the last minute. It curved to the north. It curved to the south. It went over the mountains of the Dominican Republic and fizzled out. And yeah, that happened a lot. And a lot of people were like, oh, they always say it's coming. It's never coming. But the older people knew. And we prepped and hunkered down for Andrew pretty well, but some people didn't. And then after Andrew, like anything, any whiff of a tropical depression or anything, and like all the shutters went up and everybody hunkered down, it's like, okay, we learned.
Yeah.
So
you went through Andrew.
Yeah.
You were living in Miami.
I was right in the heart of it.
And how old were you?
I was 15.
Okay.
Turning 16. It was 92, so I just turned 16.
And you have a pretty interesting story, I think.
Well, okay, my parents were divorced.
Yeah.
I lived with my dad. My sister lived with my mom and my stepdad. They lived just like a half a mile away.
Wow.
They had this little like matchstick loft cute house, but not built to withstand
a
hurricane, which why you would own one of those in South Florida, I have no idea, but my stepfather
did. Why did they even build them?
Yeah, why you even build them, but they don't anymore. But it was like built in the 60s or something. So he owned that. It obviously wasn't safe. So me and my dad had this little one-bedroom apartment. Might have been 2-bedroom, actually. We had like a 2-bedroom apartment that was basically just a concrete bunker. We were on the first floor. There was a sliding glass window, but there was a big wall that like kind of walled in our little patio area.
Yeah.
It was like a 7 or 8 foot wall. So, I mean, we felt pretty safe about that. It was one of the more safe places I think you could be in South Florida, a little concrete bunker with a big wall.
Yeah.
So we all just hunkered down. My grandmother was staying with us at the time.
And your mom and stepdad and sister.
My mom, stepdad, sister, and grandma, and me and my dad all hunkered down.
All hunkered down together.
All hunkered down together in the and rode out Andrew. And yeah, it was quite a time.
And Andrew was pretty devastating, right? I mean, I was only like 9, and I didn't live in Florida, so I don't really remember.
Yeah, we learned a tough lesson with Andrew in that the building code sucked. B, the code that was even in place wasn't really well enforced. Mm. And so you had a lot of houses and communities and buildings that just were not made to withstand Hurricane Andrew, which came on shore as a Category 4, I'm pretty sure.
What happened to your stepdad's house?
It was fine.
Oh.
Yeah, great. It was basically untouched. Two or three doors down, there was just a concrete slab.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where depending on where you were, some people's homes were untouched, some people's were completely destroyed. A lot of people I know, their houses were completely destroyed. There were entire communities that were completely destroyed because they were built like little matchstick houses very mm-hmm. cheaply. Mm-hmm. And they changed all the building codes after that. So anything, you know, built or rebuilt after Andrew is probably going to hold up better, but we're about to find out. The latest track, I don't think Miami is going to get the worst of it. It looks like it'll be the west coast of Florida, Naples, Tampa, Venice, that area, some of the Keys. So
okay.
We'll see. Another big difference between this storm is Andrew and this storm are both going to be probably about equally as powerful when this one makes landfall. But the area of Andrew where the most damaging winds were was much, much smaller than Irma. Irma is a giant, massive megastorm.
Yeah, they said that the storm itself was the size of France.
Yeah.
The country of France.
Yeah.
If you put that in the same, that's the size. That's insane.
Over the past 24 hours, it's shrunk a little, but it may expand.
And it started to like
again.
Kind of break up a little bit.
It did over Cuba, but now it's making that turn to the north, and it's going to be over warm water. There's very little wind shear, so it's probably going to re-intensify and be really, really, really bad again by the time it makes landfall. So.
Okay.
Yep.
And I want to say the difference really between Harvey and Irma is essentially Harvey was water. It was just dumping water.
Yeah,
Harvey
did this weird thing where even when the worst of the wind had dissipated because it was over land, it just kind of stuck and sat over the same parts of Texas for like 2 or 3 days.
Right.
And just dumped rain
and then
incessantly.
It would go back out to the warm water, grab more water, and then come back in and dump. This is not
that was a rain event. This is not
this
a
is
huge
not
rain event.
This is wind.
I mean,
there's
going to be a lot of rain and there's going to be some flooding issues, but this is more the damaging wind and the storm surge. People who don't live on the coast don't really understand this. In a big storm, the sea level rises as 5 to 10 feet. And they're saying with this one, it could rise like 10 to 15 feet in some parts. So that's crazy. So like, imagine you live on the water and your land is 5, 10 feet above sea level, which is pretty common. And now basically the ocean itself is going to be lapping at your front door. Now, and that's without figuring in the wind.
Right.
And everything
the other
else.
Thing, too, that I heard the mayor, I think, of Miami was saying is that, you know, on a sunny day in Miami, there can be some, like, the storm drains are full.
Yeah. Here's a problem with South Florida. Climate change is already starting to inundate parts of South Florida. It's not talked about a lot because the governor does a really good job of keeping that stuff hush hush and not even using the words climate change, but it is happening.
Right.
I know firsthand because I have people that live there are affected by it.
Right.
So
this is not talking about hurricanes. This is on an average day in Miami.
Yeah.
A sunny day, everybody's on the beach, blah, blah, blah. The rising sea levels are already affecting the city,
yes.
right?
Yeah, they're already affecting property. They're already, parts of Miami Beach can get very easily flooded just from a combination of wind and high tide, even on a clear day, like you said. So this is potentially really, really bad. It looks like more so now for the west coast of Florida, but the storm surge will affect the east coast of Florida too. So,
And this is, you know, like you said, it's not all about climate change, but it, people keep saying, this isn't the time to bring up politics. This isn't the time to bring up politics. And it's like, well, I wish climate change wasn't a political issue because it's a science issue.
Right. But you guys have made it a political
issue.
That's
like saying, you know, while doing chemotherapy is not a good time to talk about cancer. Right. You know, like, no, it's when, you know, it's the same thing with sort of gun violence and whatever else the right doesn't want to talk about.
Now that somebody shot up a school is not the time to talk about, you know, gun control.
Gun control. Right. When is it? When nobody shoots anybody? I do want to just say, like, the science is in and climate change is real. And these sort of weather events, you know, it's not just these hurricanes in the South. The entire Northwest and Northwest is burning. Parts of Oregon, there's a giant wildfire in Oregon that crossed the Columbia Gorge, which is not supposed to happen, could potentially affect Portland. Montana's completely on fire. There's fires in Colorado.
A couple years ago, we had the record-breaking drought in California. Yeah,
and now there's fires there. I mean, the entire northwest of the country is burning. The entire southeast of the country is underwater.
And
we're going to have to talk about what the fuck.
Well, yeah, and let's also be clear, right? People on the right can be very dismissive and say there have always been wildfires, there have always been hurricanes, there have always been floods.
Sure.
This is true, but now they're becoming more intense, they're becoming more unusual, they're lasting longer, they're breaking records, they're creeping into geographical areas where they necessarily haven't before. So
a wildfire crossing the Columbia Gorge is sort of like a wildfire crossing an ocean. I mean, that seems dramatic, but I've been to the Columbia Gorge. I don't know if you have. And it's incredible and beautiful and amazing. And there's no way basically, I heard the story in NPR that these two wildfires three, I think, sort of burning in sort of areas that were next to each other. And they all just kind of came up and kissed and became one wildfire that just destroyed.
That happens.
But the Columbia Gorge, that's a big deal. For me, like I lived on the West Coast for a long time, in all three states, and wow, that's stunning. That's never happened, essentially. And just like, I think the other thing that makes all of this so crazy is the major cities that are impacted. Usually when, a lot of these events happen, they happen in, you know, like in Colorado, we have tornadoes, but they happen in areas that are not densely populated because we populated areas that are sort of close to the mountains.
Right.
And there's a sort of plains area in Colorado that is pretty sparse, pretty rural.
Yeah.
And there's like a tornado alley over there. And tornadoes are measured not by their strength, but by their destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can have like, I don't know exactly, I forget the rating scale of tornadoes, but essentially a tornado
can be like F1 through F5.
Yeah, F5.
Not unlike hurricanes, which have a 1 through 5 scale.
Right. But they determine the scale of a tornado not based on its strength, but based on its destruction.
I thought it was based on the size, but
no, it's not. Okay. It's unlike hurricanes in that way. So if it tears through, you know, a wide open valley where there isn't anything, then it was a super strong tornado, but it didn't really do any damage.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these things occur, but what's sort of striking to me is that it's like Houston, Miami, Tampa, Portland, like these are major U.S. cities with giant populations of people.
Yeah.
And that sort of level of destruction is so much more impactful because of the number of people that are there, the number of structures that are there. You know, Houston, I don't know how many years it will take for them to recover from Harvey.
Parts of it may never.
Yeah. Same as New Orleans.
And same as Miami. There were parts, especially of South Dade, you know, south of the city where it was the worst, where 10 years after, 15 years after, still was never rebuilt.
Yeah.
Still.
There are parts of New Orleans that are still, I mean, New Orleans is a tragedy for me because it was such a cultural epicenter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there are parts of New Orleans that will never be the same, and parts of it that still aren't rebuilt, and parts of it that, you know, they have this awful like tour bus thing where you can go and still to this day tour parts of New Orleans that were affected by Katrina that still are not rebuilt.
Yeah.
And final note on all of this stuff, I want to just say, I read this thing the other day that I thought was pretty profound, and basically it just said, you know, what we lack in this country is not a sense of heroism. You know, you see all these people helping each other in their time of need, and it was incredibly inspiring, and Houston is full of heroes. And what the problem is that we have a lack of, it's not that we have a lack of heroism. Like, you know, I was talking to my dad and he was like, if I had a boat, I would be out there right now. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I know that's true. What I need from you though, is not to be on a boat out there right now. I need in a year, in 2 years, in 5 years, I need you to still care.
Right.
I need you to still care about the people who didn't rebuild in a year because they are millionaires. I need you to still care about the infrastructure of the city and the people who are still hurting 5 years from now.
Right.
10 years from now.
Right.
Because he was very upset by Harvey. And he said, well, I mean, I think we'll get it done by then. And I said, well, I don't. And we won't get it done, certainly, if we don't have federal funding.
Right.
And federal funding is something that he's sort of against because he's a conservative Republican.
Right.
And so we had this conversation and he was very like, of course, of course. And I said, you know, when you look at all these people and you feel all of this compassion for them because they're, you know, wading through, you know, chest high floodwaters and they're carrying their dog and you're like, oh my God, these are Americans just like me.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to care about that in 5 years when these people are still impacted by this event.
Right.
When they still need help and they, you know, they're in a FEMA trailer and you're bitching about, you know, these people who are sucking the life out of us because of, you know, welfare or whatever. That's the part that I need you to have. And I need everybody to have that.
Right.
To understand that we feel compassion for these people when they're in the most dire of straits, but those dire of straits are going to last for a very long time.
Yes, absolutely.
And we need to continue to help
them. It's not that once you rescue the family in the boat,
now.
Then you get them to dry land that... okay, they're saved and now life goes on. It's
right.
Like that,
no,
their struggle
what?
Is just beginning.
Now what?
Yeah.
They don't have a home. They may not have a job. They don't have any, like the whole city was destroyed.
Houston built a lot of properties, places where you could not get flood insurance.
That's right.
Or that they changed the flood insurance laws so it was shitty or so they could build there. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the aftermath of Harvey is going to be so many prongs to it.
Yes.
That people don't realize that. And I hope it gets the coverage it deserves.
You
know,
do too.
I think the news will have moved on to something else.
Well, it's already moved on to Irma.
Yeah.
You know, fuck Harvey, I guess. But Houston, you know, it's the fourth largest or most populous city in the country.
Yeah.
And God, that matters. That's a mm-hmm. lot of people.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and what's happening is it's starting to dry out. They've been
right.
very lucky to have.
We
like,
don't have the sensational news coverage of, you know, chest high waters anymore. So I guess it's fine now.
Right, Houston has been lucky in the past 10 days, and it looks like for the next 10 days or so to have very hot, dry weather, which
great.
is good to dry up the floodwaters. But then now that, comes the carnage.
Well, the hot, dry weather does not rebuild your house.
No.
It doesn't rebuild
no.
anything.
Yeah,
it just makes
now,
it so that
now you
no
can
water.
Start. Yeah, now you can start to take. Account of all the destruction.
Right.
And now what?
Right. And now what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll get there. Irma is going to cause a ton of damage. I'm very, very concerned about the west coast of Florida. Tampa
yeah.
is very prone to flooding. They're going to have, looks like, massive storm surge and a lot of damage. That is a very densely populated, huge urban center. So
okay.
we'll just watch and cross our fingers and hope for the best.
Yes. And do whatever we can to help.
Yeah.
I would encourage you to donate to local organizations rather than national organizations.
Yeah.
There's a lot of resources out there. If you have the means to donate, I would encourage you to do so. And maybe not the Red Cross, maybe like local organizations who are on the ground. You know, you can kind of Google around and find people who are, or Twitter around and find people who are posting local organizations that are on the ground helping people. There's been some controversy about the Red Cross since Harvey and how much of the money that's donated to them.
Yeah, there's always something
you know,
with the Red Cross.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I tend not to donate to the Red Cross. I don't want to throw shade at them or talk shit, but I just
yeah, they
find
they
that
do good work, but there people have some issues with the way they run the business.
Absolutely. And what percentage of the donations actually go toward helping people on the ground and what percentage of it goes to sort of marketing to get more donations and
yeah.
the administrative costs of the people that work there and that kind of thing. So I just think that, like, you know, whatever, I have a friend who's just an animal activist, crazy. That's her thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is animals. And so, she likes to donate money to organizations that are helping animals that are stranded, left behind, you know, abandoned, or unable to be taken care of
right.
because of these events. So like, if that's your thing, do that. If it's, you know, helping, people who are, in nursing homes and, you know, they don't have enough resources or whatever it is that your thing is, I just would encourage you to look up, local organizations that are doing the work on the ground to help those people and,
yeah.
and your money will make a much bigger impact, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah. So that's the weather.
now sports.
Yeah. I was telling you the other day, it's so funny, how the world under Trump, has politicized everyone. It used to be that you could go, you know, go on a smoke break and you stand with the smokers that you see every day and it's small talk or it's interesting talk, but no one ever talks politics, right? You don't talk about politics with strangers. It's
right.
dangerous.
Right.
It's impolite, right? Don't talk about politics or religion at dinner parties. It seems sort of to me these days, yeah. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it seems like that rule has gone out the window completely.
Like,
you
can't
even do something as simple as talking about the weather. That's the standard, like, small talk fare.
Well,
no, what about this weather?
Isn't some of that a result of the merging of the entertainment and reality tabloid world and politics with the president?
I think so, but it's very weird. Like, you go outside and you're like, oh, what about this weather?
Everybody's got an opinion about
Trump. In Colorado, you know, what about this weather? It's a very nice day. However, it should be a blue sky and it's not. Why is it not a blue sky?
Right.
Because the smoke from the wildfires from the west are literally covering the sun.
Yeah.
So it's this smoky sky in the middle of the day. And when you say something as innocuous as how about the weather, it sort of funnels into this, like, snowballs into this conversation about climate change and the president and the end of the world in a single cigarette with a stranger. And it's very strange. It's a very strange world that we live in, and everybody has a lot to say. And I think it's, I just think it's interesting and I think it's good, you know?
Well, pivoting from that, I get the world of politics goes on despite natural disasters and everything else. Where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the DACA announcement?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a little complicated, but essentially, Trump initially announced, he got Jeff Sessions to announce because he didn't want to announce it himself.
He's a pussy.
That he's going to essentially end DACA in 6 months, sorta.
Yes, DACA is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which is the what we call the Dreamers, right? Children that were brought here by their parents illegally when they were children, and they've been raised in this country their whole lives.
Lived in this country.
They are undocumented because they weren't born in this country. They were brought here.
They haven't committed a violent crime or what have you.
So the Dreamers, the DACA specifically only covers exactly people who have not committed any violent crimes, who were brought here as children. And there's a host of things that they have to do to qualify for DACA protection.
Right.
And one of those things was coming out of the shadows and saying, I am one of these people.
Right.
And they were assured by Barack Obama that they would be protected.
Right.
And with the, I think the sort of cruelty of all of this is that, you know, these people came out of the shadows and they said, here's who I am. And they proved themselves and I have a job or I'm in school and all these, you know, all the requirements.
Right.
And Trump and his administration is now going to use all of that information to round them up and deport them.
Yeah, ICE has basically said, oh yeah, they registered, we're going to use that, and we're going to find them, and we're going to deport them.
Yes. So, yeah, so he announced that, because this was a big thing during the campaign in the past couple of months that, you know, he said, which is unusual for him, that this was a difficult decision. Trump doesn't admit that very often.
Right.
He said, you know, this is painful and I'm not really sure. And that sort of wavering, I don't think was because he has empathy, because he's a narcissist, but I think it was because it's very politically difficult.
Well, his cover was, well, President Obama did it illegally because he sidestepped Congress.
Yeah.
So now I'm giving Congress 6 months to figure it out and write a law and then I'll sign it. Ostensibly. But there's no guarantee that'll happen with this Congress.
Of course it won't.
And now, then he sort of walked it back. He tweeted, well, in 6 months, if it doesn't happen, I'll revisit it.
Yes.
Like, he's already kind of hedging.
And then his administration was like, well, that's not really what he meant. Of course we're going to end DACA, but maybe not. Like, they just don't know what to do. Because
no, they have no idea.
From a moral stance and from a even a polling stance, it's widely popular.
Yeah, people even with love Republicans.
The Dreamers. Even
yeah.
with Republicans. People are like, why would we deport them to where?
But again,
deport them to a country they've never been to with a language they may or may not speak that they have no, like, they are Americans.
Yeah, but again, it's the hardest, most intractable,
racist,
strident core of the conservative Republican base that is the most politically active and the most, you know, so they're the ones that need to get...
the racists.
Yeah, the racists.
They're people who voted for Trump for that reason.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And they're the one anybody seems to care about the most.
Right. Except that from a polling perspective, everyone else is against that. And so that's, I think, where the waffling comes in. Where
yeah.
this, like, well, maybe, I don't know. Oh, I know it's the absolute wrong thing to do, but these racist people that want me to do it, so I kind of have but I'm really sorry.
Every other president, Democratic or Republican, you know, would face these moral tests and say, damn the tough politics of it, I have to do the right thing here.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a president with absolutely no moral compass.
No.
He's
a narcissist.
He's just raising his finger to the wind on how is this going to play? How is this going to make me look? That's all he cares about.
Yes.
The problem with that is he's also in his little bubble about that. So he doesn't even always know how the wind is actually blowing.
No, he puts his finger up and somebody blows.
Right.
And he thinks that's the wind.
Right.
But he's not even outside.
Right. He refuses to, like, pay attention to any news but Fox and Friends or, well, he keeps an eye on everybody, but, like, the steady stream of information he only gets from, like,
people
the Breitbart
who,
Fox News
support
universe.
Him. Yeah, exactly.
And
he
literally, I don't know if they said they might have stopped doing this, but he gets, like, a binder of clippings about how great he is and everything, literally from all the right wing
news outlets. That's like his first.
So,
like,
that's the world.
That's his news breakfast in the morning, so that he's in a good mood.
Right.
And that's how you make Trump in a good mood, is you give him a bunch of articles about how people love him.
Right. So your uncle who only consumes Breitbart and Fox News and lives in that bubble and universe, the president does the same thing.
Yes.
So sleep well.
Yeah. My dad.
Yeah.
My dad.
So it's very unclear, and Nancy Pelosi got him to tweet out that that the Dreamers don't have anything to worry about for 6 months, but that may not be true. Other activists are saying this is not true. You really only have a month to register, but then they're scared of registering now because ICE says they're going to deport him. It's a fucking mess.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, we're pretty entrenched in the immigration battle here in Colorado.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Denver, where we live, is, without calling itself that, a sanctuary city. We've long... the city government has long taken the policy of we will not inform ICE. Denver Police Department is not in the immigration enforcement business. That's
right.
Not our job. We are not funded to do that. That's not part of our mission.
And most Republican politicians here are pretty moderate on immigration.
In Denver. In Colorado, I mean, we have Tom Tancredo, for fuck's sake. Not that he's a politician anymore. But anyway, so... What's interesting is something that recently happened is that the Denver City Council codified those sort of rules or things that we've been doing into law. They passed a city council resolution to make it the law that things like when an undocumented immigrant is going to be released from Denver County Jail, ICE would like them, the Denver County Jail, to hold that person past the time when they're supposed to be released until ICE can come pick them up.
Right.
Now, that's a violation of their constitutional rights, obviously.
Yeah.
And we said we're not going to do that.
Right.
We're just not. And so then they said, well, we want you to notify us 72 hours before their release, which is not always possible because sometimes people are only held overnight, right?
Yeah.
And we're not going to hold them past that time. We're not going to inform them when we pick up someone who's undocumented. There's a lot of things that Denver City Council is doing. So we're pretty ingrained in the immigration argument in Colorado. And, you know, the other thing I would say about this whole DACA thing is some of the language that is being used, I think, is a little bit toxic, even on the left. When we talk about these kids, these Dreamers, we say things like, you know, they can't be held responsible for their parents' actions.
Right.
They didn't do anything illegal.
Right.
And we talk about it in this
way.
So
you're inferring that the parents are criminals.
Right. That vilifies their parents in a way that I don't think that we should be doing. I think that it's important to note that these kids...
Same thing with the abortion issue, right? When it goes to, like, when they get really crazy and want to force victims of rape and incest, and you say, like, well, they didn't even do anything wrong, like, inferring that women who want to have an abortion for any reason...
don't want to be pregnant anymore did something wrong.
Right, exactly. Or maybe they don't deserve the same protections.
Right, exactly. So
it's pernicious like that.
It is. And I think language is important, and how we frame things is important. And so I think that it's better to say... You know, this person, this is, I even heard somebody on the left the other day say, I live in this blah, blah, blah town, and there's lots of undocumented people here, and they're as American as I am. They speak the same language, and they, you know, hold the same job and have the same values and culture that I do. And I was thinking, like, whoa. So back up.
Right.
I hear what you're trying to say. You're trying to sound supportive of these people by saying they're just like me.
But you're inferring that people who don't speak the same language.
Right. Or don't share the same culture or don't share the same value are less deserving of the title of American as you. And I think that that's just white privilege.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like saying, well, if they're like me, then they're fine. If they're not like me, then they're not American. And that goes into this whole thing that we've been fighting against.
Absolutely.
So I think thinking about how you think about Dreamers and how you think about these people who live in our country is important. And when you start saying something like, well, all the ones I know speak English and work at Target, like they're just like me. Right. Don't think about it that way. That doesn't make them American because they speak English or they celebrate Christmas or they wear Uggs. You know, like you're a citizen of this country because you live here and you, you know, we're a melting pot. We're our value is in our diversity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my little... You know, super lefty. Let me scold you about the way supporting these people. But it's just, I just think it's important.
So Trump stepped into a viper's pit with the DACA thing. He seemed to have been caught off guard by it because Bannon is still in his ear.
I think so.
Oh, we know so. He's
Yeah.
Bannon is still in his ear. He's still
in Sessions.
Yeah.
Hates everybody who's not Sessions. So. You know, he's all about this.
That was so bizarre, though, sending Sessions out to do your dirty work when a few weeks ago you were trying to get him to quit.
Well, yes. And there's some news on that front as well. But
I hadn't heard.
Let's keep that for a little bit later.
Okay.
It is really interesting that I think it goes to the point that I was making earlier that I think Trump understands that he doesn't actually want to do this, right? Like, if the last person in his ear had said, like, had been a dreamer, like, he understands, I think, fundamentally that this is the wrong thing to do. When he's presented
he's so scared of losing his base.
Yeah.
He needs to keep them happy.
But when presented with the actual facts, he's like, that's obviously not the right thing to do. Obviously, they should deserve to stay, and what are we doing?
Well, we don't know for sure.
But then, you know, Nancy Pelosi gets him in the room, and she's like, look, people are scared. You give them this 6-month timeline. I need to be able to assure the people that live in my district that you're not going to start rounding people up, or that the 6-month period is not a period of roundup.
And he's like, okay, sure.
And he's
like, no,
of course not. God, no. Why would I do that? That sounds awful. And she's like, well, that's what you're going to do in 6 months. And he's like, well,
maybe I'll revisit it.
And then he's like, to all you DACA people, for the next 6 months, don't worry. You're not under any danger. And it's like, okay.
Well, that's how unstable Trump is, right? Yeah. And now Republicans are starting to panic because we're going to get to the Schumer-Pelosi stuff soon, right? Because they got him in a room and they basically bent him over.
Yeah.
And now Republicans are like, well, shit. Now he's kind of been going after us, but he's more or less been playing ball.
Yes.
Now the Democrats have his ear. They can forgive that he's shat all over him and been awful because they can now get him to cave on stuff and make life difficult for us. And they're like, oh, shit.
Exactly. Well, he's
what do
not
we do?
Just going to be our golden boy in the White House that signs off on everything that we do. And I was talking to Dana about this, and I was like, the thing that maybe our like greatest strength with Trump as the president is that he doesn't know anything and we're right.
Yeah.
And so if we can get him in a room with people like Chuck Schumer and Pelosi and you know, Democratic leaders who can explain to him like he's 5 years old why it's a good idea to do this thing, because we are right.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know anything and he's not an ideologue.
Yeah. And if he's mad at Republicans for whatever reason, and he is now.
Yeah.
Then, they didn't pass my thing, and they're, you know what? I'm going to go talk to the Democrats.
And then the Democrats explain it to him like he's 5, and he's like, great point. That sounds like a good idea. That sounds like the thing that might save the country.
Sure, whatever.
And then he does it, and then the Republicans are like, what the fuck? And you're like, yeah, you didn't vote in a politician. Remember? That was your whole point. It was so exciting for you to not vote in somebody who knows anything about politics. Mm-hmm. This is what you fucking get.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand the game. He doesn't understand the game or policy.
Or he doesn't care.
And
either.
He doesn't care. Right. But if you say to him, like, we have to do something and here's our plan, also Paul Ryan's a dick, right?
He prefers
He's like, fuck yes, Paul Ryan's a dick, and that actually sounds pretty smart. Done. Like, that's all you have to do. It's brilliant.
Yeah, well, even to complicate things now, you have Paul Ryan trying to push back on this for the sake of the Republican platform.
Yes.
And the Trump sycophants, apologists out there, they have no recourse. So now they're just turning on Ryan.
Yeah. Fuck him. Yeah.
Oh, no. That was a good move for Trump to make the deal with.
To do exactly what the Democrats wanted him to do.
What? We're going to revisit the debt ceiling in 3 months, and then they're going to extract a bunch more concessions from the Republicans and Trump so that we don't default? Are you crazy?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, no, that was a good move.
That was a great
okay.
move. Yeah.
And that's the ironic part, right? When some Republicans like Ryan and others, when they go to the press and they scream about this and they bitch about Schumer and Pelosi, they're actually freaking out just because their own party is so dysfunctional.
Yes.
Because these debt limit fights lead to these crisis showdowns because of them.
Yes. They, exactly. It's them.
Their fault.
Yes. Yes. They are the cause of all of this.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah. So when they're like, oh my God, I can't believe he made this horrible deal. What he's saying is the people in my party are so horrible.
Yes.
And we could have cleared this off the books for almost 2 years and not had to worry about it. But now we have to revisit it in 3 months. And we're probably going to have to make a bunch of concessions to the Democrats just to keep the doors open in government. Because if we don't, it would be catastrophic politically for us.
Yes.
So it's like... Yes. It's like they're complaining that like our party is so awful that we made this deal with Democrats to expose how awful we are. That's awful.
It's awful.
It's like, yeah, it is.
Yes.
Whose fault
awful.
Is that?
You're fucking awful. I heard somebody say today, or I was reading something, and it was this Republican strategist who said, as crazy as this is and as much ire as it's drawn from the Republican Party, Trump may have just saved the Republican Party from itself.
Yeah, they always say that. But
to your point, right? Like, he did the deal with the Democrats for whatever probably crazy notions.
He was probably bored and wanted to get out of the room.
Yeah, well, apparently, according to White House sources, he was super, super, super excited about the press coverage he was going to get.
For crossing over.
Crossing over, because that will prove that he's what he said he was, which is a deal maker. And isn't he looking great?
It was a terrible
Apparently,
deal for
he
him,
called
though.
Pelosi and was like, isn't this press great?
And Nancy's she's figured it out. They've decoded him
isn't
now.
Isn't it good?
That's
it's
why
so
Republicans
good.
Are panicking.
Pumpkin pie, the press coverage, they love you now. They love you, Duncan.
Schumer
you
and Pelosi.
You did so good. You did so good. Look at what CNN said. Isn't it amazing? Pumpkin, you did so good. Okay, let's talk on Tuesday.
Yeah.
We got to talk about taxes. You want more press coverage like that? Come talk to me, Pumpkin.
Yep.
Come on. You did so good.
They've decoded him.
Yeah.
It took a little while, but they've decoded him. And Republicans have not and cannot because, and here's the problem again, right? People think the biggest problem with the Trump presidency so far is all his scandals and his awfulness and that's all true.
Right, right, right.
But the biggest problem is he's trying to push through an agenda that everybody hates.
Yes.
And his agenda is Republican conservatism 101.
Yes.
Repeal Obamacare, tax cuts for the rich, mm-hmm. fuck the environment.
Cut all social programs.
Yeah, no, nobody wants this.
No. No.
That's the problem. So the Democrats can get him to play ball because it's...
Because, again, he doesn't know anything. And if you can just explain it to him and explain how it's politically good, not politically good, I'm sorry, personally good for him, right? You get him in the room and you say, I know you don't know anything about this. Here's the best plan. And it fucks Paul Ryan because you hate him right now.
And the press will be great.
And the press is going to love you for this. And CNN's going to love you for this. And MSNBC's going to love you. Then he's like, fuck it. Let's do it. What is it? Sign. Done. What are we doing? I don't care. Right? The Republicans are ideologues. Mm-hmm. Like the Paul Ryans of the world want this garbage passed.
Yes.
They don't care who the person is in the Oval Office as long as there's an R next to their name and they'll sign off on anything that
and
they
And some of them are under the delusion that the American people actually want this.
Right.
Some of them know better.
Right. Obviously not true. I mean, the overwhelming majority of Americans do not want to repeal DACA.
Well, the overwhelming majority didn't want them to do repeal and replace with Obamacare, and we came perilously close to that.
And the only reason that that didn't happen is because the majority of Americans didn't want it, and they made their voices very loud and very clear.
But it was still one vote.
I know. I know. Take our victories where they are. It's dead for now.
Okay, but here's the thing. Let's not get too complacent or comfortable, because Bannon can get in his ear tomorrow and, you know.
Oh, it's always the last person in the room.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and one of the things we're going to do in the second half of the show is we're going to not talk about this. We're going to talk about some of the things that are actually policy stuff that's happening, that's not Hurricane Irma, and that's not Trump-Russia. We're going to talk about the reason that elections matter, which is his cabinet and his policies and the people who he's appointed that are making real policy.
Or trying to, or pretending to.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that. It's very, very important. And here's another interesting thing that got buried today in all the other hurricane and everything else news, is that a bunch of Republicans, House members, are announcing their retirement.
Really?
Yes. Charlie Dent is retiring.
Really?
There's somebody from a swingy district in Washington State that's retiring.
Washington is interesting politically in that way.
Yeah, I think there's like seven retirements so far.
Wow.
All Republican.
Wow.
So the rats really are jumping ship. And a lot of people are speculating that word is starting to go around about just how bad the Mueller findings are going to be.
Yes.
But we haven't paid much attention to that this week.
No.
There's been little news on that front. We might get to it if we have time. But keep your eye on this. A lot of the rats are jumping ship already.
Yes.
And we're not a year in.
That's right. And a lot of people, you know, there was a report out of the Washington Post that Mueller's starting to, I think there's 17 White House aides that he is subpoenaed,
mm-hmm.
not subpoenaed, but is, you know, interviewing.
Yeah.
And they're like, but it's not Trump, so it must not be a big deal. And this prosecutor came in and said, the target is always the last witness.
Yeah.
Like, we need to get everyone else on record, and then you talk to the person that you think is, that did it, right?
Right.
Because you need to know what the facts are before that person tells you lies.
Yeah, of course.
So that you can,
of course,
you know.
Yeah.
So no, they're not going to interview Trump first.
Yeah.
They're going to interview everyone else and figure out exactly what happened and then hear him lie.
Yeah. And then if he perjures himself in front of, because it'll be probably a grand jury like they did with Clinton and the cigar.
Yeah.
And then if he perjures himself, then he's really screwed.
Yeah.
And of course he's going to perjure himself.
I think he'll resign before he even gets called.
To the grand jury?
Yeah.
It's possible.
I don't think, because I think he understands on some level that this is happening and that it's really bad. And
this isn't one of his, you know, stiffing contractor cases where or Trump University where he can
just out money them
and then settle them and then never pay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yeah, exactly. Or just, I have 20 lawyers, you have one, mm-hmm. I'll make this last for 20 years and you'll have nothing.
Right.
And then people give up.
Right.
Take half or take... This isn't that.
No.
This is a criminal and civil investigation into...
This is the full legal force of the United States federal government.
That's correct.
And Republicans are trying some last-ditch efforts to derail it.
Nunes
is out there doing his work.
Nunes? No.
It'll always be Nunes to me.
Okay. There's a thread on Twitter that I read that I might read later when we get into this more, but about... sort of how the backroom dealings are working to try to derail the Mueller investigation. I think there really isn't any stopping this man at this point.
No, it's a runaway freight train.
Yeah.
And it's gaining steam.
And it really is. It really is. It's going to be explosive, I think. There's a lot of implications.
I see a lot of the Trump people on Twitter going like, this investigation's been going on for and he's found nothing. I'm like, you have no idea what he's found.
Oh my God. What?
You have no idea what he's found. I'm like, okay. Yeah, stick with that.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Okay. That sounds good. Oh my God. That's hilarious. Yeah.
It's like, because he's going to hold a press conference every time there's a finding? No, that's not how these things work.
That's not how anything works. No.
Yeah.
No, that's not how anything works.
It's not how any of this works.
No.
Well, we're about ready for a break. When we come back, we have a lot to say, or Rachel has a lot to say about good old Betsy DeVos.
I do.
Because even though her shit has been on the back pages this week, it's really, really important. If you are a student or know a student or have any student loan debt, her shenanigans are very important.
that's another aspect of it.
Well, but, yeah, I have a little bit to chime in on about that.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to talk about Betsy DeVos's dismantling of Title IX. We're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into what that means and what Title IX is and what garbage person she is and how she may be number two to Jeff Sessions in my
shit list.
Arya Stark list.
All right. So hold that thought. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Reverend Testimony, and Rachel's got a thing or two to tell you about Betsy DeVos and Title IX.
Yes, I certainly do. So, in the midst of all of the craziness that's been happening, I think we're missing out on some of the stuff that's happening in actual government by people who are leading the government. So, Betsy DeVos, Secretary of the Department of Education, a much maligned figure. Her confirmation was incredibly close and very, very controversial, mm-hmm. in part because she favors school choice, which means that she does not value public education as an institution and would like to see it privatized mm-hmm. because she's a Republican. Importantly, under Betsy DeVos, the Department of Education is also has the purview of universities.
Right. Right,
all public education. So there's this thing called Title IX that we hear a lot about in the media, and it's usually tied to sports.
Yes.
Right? Collegiate
when
sports.
When it first was announced and enacted, that's all anybody knew or talked about was the sports angle.
Right.
And do you want me to explain the sports angle, or is it not important right now?
Oh, it is important.
Okay.
But let me just give a background on it, and then I want you to talk about the sports thing.
Right.
So Title IX is actually Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972.
Right.
So that's the law. Title IX is the section of mm-hmm. that law that basically says that any institution who gets public funding, federal funding, cannot discriminate based on sex.
Right.
This is 1972. Richard Nixon, by the way, Nixon.
Yeah, signed I remember
this law,
that guy.
Right? So this is a Republican. And the law got a lot of pushback, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And it went through a bunch of amendments and people trying to change it. It's gone through, I don't even know, countless Supreme Court challenges, and it is important right now because part of the law is that sexual harassment, including sexual violence and sexual assault, is included in sex discrimination,
mm-hmm.
which of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
And Betsy DeVos is currently trying to roll back Title IX, mm-hmm. so that's why it's important. So the law specifically says no person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance.
Right.
That seems pretty straightforward. And, like, good. Right? Like, that's not really a hard thing to fight about.
Right.
Okay. So talk about the sports angle for a minute, and then I'm going
to... Well, this was murky, and it needed to be tweaked, because we got into some shady territory here. This was in the 90s.
Yes. 80s and 90s.
80s and 90s. I remember it to be the mid-90s when it actually became a thing that, like, affected schools, like the high school I worked at. It sort of came into play a little bit.
Okay.
Basically, and there was a series of court battles
yes.
over it. And what it said was this: if there's a sport that's offered at the school for men, that you have to offer that same sport for women mm-hmm. if there's demand.
Yes.
If there is not, and women want to compete on the men's team of whatever sport this is, they have to be allowed to.
Okay.
And I don't know if I'm getting that exactly right. I'm probably not.
Okay.
But that's essentially how it sort of manifested itself from my memories in the 90s.
Okay.
And I remember there was a little bit of pushback, but ultimately at the end of the day, it's like that made sense. Now, the right wing came in with all these stories of like, okay, that means all these schools have to shut down their football programs and their basketball programs and their right. soccer programs. And in reality, I don't think that actually ever happened.
That's not true at all. Right. Yes. That was the angle.
Right.
Well,
or they were worried that was going
to
happen.
If women don't want to play rugby, then men can't. Which is not at all.
No.
At all what the law says.
No.
At all.
No.
It just says that you can't discriminate against women.
And I think, you know,
against anyone.
I think Fox News and the right wing outlets did maybe find one or two parochial or other types of schools out there that maybe had an AD or a principal that to make a point, they like canceled the boys' soccer team in like a protest yes. over Title IX when they really yes. didn't have to.
Correct. There were a couple of cases where that happened.
Yes.
Which has nothing to do with the law and everything to do with politics.
Grandstanding.
And
yeah.
grandstanding. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
So really the thing that's so interesting is the fight in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s was all about sports. Mm-hmm. And the fight now is all about sexual assault.
Yes.
So
right. We weren't even thinking about that in the
90s. Not at all. So in 1984, this case Grove City versus Bell happened, went to the Supreme Court, and basically they said you can't consider an athletic sport that is not, because the sport itself creates its own revenue stream, right? This is like a college team that created its own revenue stream. It is sort of self-funded in a way because people pay for tickets and they buy merchandise just the same way that, right? That you couldn't technically consider that to be federally funded. And in Grove City v. Bell, the court said, that's right. Technically, this sport is not federally funded. So in 1988, Congress passed the Civil Rights Restoration Act of 1987. Reagan vetoed it, and the Congress overturned his veto. Overrode his veto and passed this law, which said that it overrode Grove City v. Bell. That's the way that government's supposed to operate. Mm-hmm. The court says, well, this is the law. And this violates that law, and then Congress changes the law, and that's what happened.
Right.
And they expanded the definition of federal funding to say, look, this is a federally funded school, and this sport is part of that school. Like, you know, Miami, right? Like, let's say, or CSU, whatever. Let's say there's a public school, university. There's a team, CSU Rams, that team certainly does create revenue for the school, but the point is that people who go to that school should have access to that school sanctioned activity.
Right.
So whether or not the athletic program produces its own revenue, it is still a part of that public university, and that public university gets federal funding. And under Title IX, if you are a public university that gets federal funding, you cannot discriminate based on sex. Mm-hmm. And so that 1988 law overrode Grove City v. Bell and reinstated Title IX for athletics.
And here's the thing, right? Even private universities get public money because they use Pell Grants and
yes.
all kinds of other
yes.
stuff.
Yes.
And their science and medical programs, you know, apply for federal grants. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Even the University of Miami, which is a private university, uses government funds for all kinds of things.
That's right.
As does every university.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some that are just
there's
completely
probably some like Catholic
parochials
schools maybe
and,
or something
yeah.
that don't. And this doesn't just apply to colleges, by the way. Title IX applies to
high schools.
Yeah. All across the board, right? Elementary schools, junior highs, high schools, colleges, anything that has federal funding.
Yeah.
So 1998 is the first time anybody thought about sexual harassment. And it was in a case called Davis v. Monroe City Board of Education. And it was the first time that it was established that if one student is being harassed or assaulted or raped or whatever by another student, that the victim of that assault can sue the university. And that was a really controversial thing in 98. That was like, wait, the university didn't rape you. Well, the university has this pervasive culture of allowing and apologizing and not doing anything about sexual assaults on campus. And so the court decided, yeah, the university is liable under Title IX. Because under Title IX, it says that these institutions have a requirement to not allow sexual discrimination. And I think it's pretty obvious to anyone with a brain that, you know, if you're being sexually assaulted in school, that is a form of sex discrimination, especially if the school allows it to happen and doesn't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Right? So in 2011, Joe Biden and the Obama administration wrote this letter called Dear Colleague. It was in April of 2011, and it outlined for all educational institutions how Title IX specifically addresses sexual violence and sexual harassment on campuses, and sort of gave them a roadmap of how to apply Title IX to dealing with cases of sexual assault and sexual violence on campuses. I read the letter. I encourage you to read it. It's very well sourced and documented. There's a lot of statistics and facts. There's lots of footnotes. It's just very exhaustive in terms of what they recommend schools doing. I don't think that it's overly harsh. I don't think that it's overly burdensome. I think it just explains why this applies to Title IX and what the statistics are on, you know, rape and sexual harassment and sexual violence on college campuses and other campuses, and what schools should do. And it sort of just gives them like a roadmap of how to implement Title IX appropriately. And it also provides, as like exhibits to the colleague letter, student information. So, you know your rights, and here's what you can do, and here's who you should report to, and here's if things don't go your way, or like if you feel whatever. It specifically identifies victims' rights as well as the accused rights, and how that process should be transparent. So that happened, and the sort of sexual assault survivor community really fought for that and were really, really happy with it and really thought that it made a huge difference. So, moving forward to now. A couple of months ago, Betsy DeVos announced this, quote, listening tour where she was going to go listen to different advocates from both sides about what they could do to improve the Title IX provisions under the Dear Colleague letter. In doing so, she decided to meet with some survivors groups, and she also decided to meet with some fucking MRAs. Because both sides. Mm. Which I can't really tell you how offensive it is to me that happened, but let me just go with one of the groups that she met with, the National Coalition for Men. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine this is going to be a good time. They're sort of singularly obsessed with false accusations, with that being a thing that's like the most pervasive problem with rape, is that
that so too many women are make it up.
Yes.
Because they're mad at their boyfriend or they feel bad about having sex.
That's correct. So Candace Jackson is the Department of Education's civil rights chief, said 90% of sexual assault allegations made in college are really a result of drunk sex or breakup sex. 90%.
Wow.
This is the civil rights chief of the Department of Education. Okay. This is not an MRA. That's okay. So they decide to meet with the National Coalition for Men. And I did some deep diving on them today, and it was very traumatic. On their main page, they say that false accusations of rape is psychological rape, that there is, quote, not much research to show how many false accusations are out there, but, quote, some studies show 50% or more of allegations examined are false.
Are there any citations for this?
No. Wow. Just some studies.
That's shocking.
Some studies. And they point to this Loyola paper doesn't exist, because I went to the website and searched for it and it's not there. So the best data that we have is that between 2 and 10% of rape allegations are false accusations. Mm-hmm. That, of course, does not even start to talk about the number that are not reported. So, you know, I'm like, okay, she met with these people. They're obsessed with false accusations. Sure, sure. Like, okay, you know, occasionally it happens. And all over their website, there's like, you know, the one case that happened in the last 5 years. And it like, just dig into it and talk about how awful this person is. But then I do a little bit more digging. And really, it doesn't take about more than 30 seconds to find this article, which is on their main page. This is the organization that Betsy DeVos chose to meet with when discussing sexual assault allegations on college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
This is the article that they published. I'm just going to read from it for a moment.
Oh, boy. Okay.
The article is entitled, Communicate Boundaries. Sounds good, right?
I see where this is going, I think.
It is time to talk about a taboo subject, our male libido. More specifically, it's time to discuss how this natural trait exposes us to manipulation by females employing seduction and superior communication skills to ensnare and lead us into compromising situations. Despite having an extensive and in-depth history about males, chronicled by men, it is clear that we do not fully understand masculine sensibilities and vulnerabilities. But this must change. We need to learn more and protect ourselves against the Achilles heel of susceptibility to femme fatale flim-flammery.
Wow, okay.
Wow, okay. The modern men's liberation movement is focusing on burnishing our individual identities and self-esteem. We must no longer permit females to take advantage of us because we are hypnotically attracted to them and distracted from our own objectives. Sadly, most of us, depending on age and experience, struggle to contain the sexual urges and inconsequential arousals that women readily stir within us. Meanwhile, our feline counterparts seem to revel in how easy it is to dominate us, as well as our pathetic submissions to our primal desire. They disrespect us rather than working with us for the greater good. Americans' power-wielding women spend $62 billion a year to enhance their looks, outshine any other woman they view as a rival, and entice the opposite sex, all in the name of gaining some advantage. They use makeup, perfumes, hair extensions, clothing, and even big butts to hijack our attentions and ambitions. Unfortunately, many men don't see through this charade. They are so visually regulated that they can't help but be captivated. If, for example, she accentuates her cleavage by adjusting her attire, the typical male brain immediately whirs through a web of sexual possibilities. In that moment, a woman can exert full dominance and power over a man, turning him into little more than a trail-sniffing dog. With a sensual smile and a flick of her hair, she can latch on to the whole of his constitution and then blind him even further with her boobs and ass. Young or old, most men are soon transfixed, mouths hanging open, searching for signals of a sexual go. But like the low-rent stripper seeking silver for sex, she's simply luring him in with powerful bait.
Wow.
She preys on his masculinity for her ends and means, not his. Simply put, she is disrespecting him as a man and as a person. She is using what is effectively a form of aggressive sexual assault to gain something for herself. While it might be for something relatively innocuous, such as getting help in moving a heavy object or grabbing something out of reach, or perhaps paying for a meal, there are any number of things she may want from you. It is not an exchange based on equality and fairness, but one founded on dominance and humiliation.
I have to laugh. It's not funny at all, but it's so asinine. And these are the people
that Betsy DeVos chose to meet with to rewrite Title IX.
Correct.
That's amazing.
The people that wrote that article are the people that Betsy DeVos decided would be a good counter argument to listen to women and believe rape survivors and maybe punish people who rape people. We're going to talk to the people who think that I don't even know how to summarize that.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there in that statement. So that's like their manifesto from their website or what?
This
what
is
was
just
that?
One article. It's the third article listed. This is just one thing that just happens to be something that they decided to put on the front page.
There's amazing.
Hundreds more like it. And these are the people that Betsy DeVos decided, you know what? We need to be fair to the rapists and make sure that they have their day in court too.
So putting on makeup is a form of sexual assault against men.
Correct.
It's a form
of dominance and humiliation and sexual assault against you because you are unwilling to control yourself when I wear red lipstick.
Unable. Rachel.
No, I made you do it.
Yeah.
I made you do it because I have boobs and ass. I wore red lipstick and I asked you to move a heavy thing and you did it because you were unable to not do it.
And that's a form of assault.
That's a sexual assault.
Yeah.
I sexually assaulted you by wearing makeup and being a human woman with boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Just existing.
Gosh.
Must be so hard.
It's just a nightmare existence for that guy, at least.
How does that make you feel as a man? Can I just ask you? Does that not make you feel completely like you have no agency in the world? Like they think of you in this way that is like, I have no agency. I'm not a human. And when I look at women, they just dominate and humiliate me with their sexiness. It must be very like, it seems infantilizing to men. Like I know a lot of men and none of them are this sort of whimpering, sniveling creature who is unable to control himself because I wore lipstick.
Well,
none of them.
Well, that's the ironic part is, you know, what the guy who wrote this article, chances are, you think he's ever touched a woman?
No.
You think if
he's a nice guy, Trav, right? He's one of those guys that like hits me up on OkCupid and he's like, hey,
no,
you're really pretty and I like your tits that aren't showing.
If a pretty girl asked him to move something, he would, and then he wouldn't get her number or he wouldn't be able to
like,
even
make
conversation
with her. Like, I'm supposed
to
blow you because you helped me move my couch?
Well, yeah, right. And then he'd feel bad about himself that he didn't get a blowjob. And then he'd think, well, I just got used because this woman charmed me into doing something and I get nothing in return.
Right. I mean, yeah. I do nice things for people all day long and they don't blow me.
Your average man doesn't relate, thinks that's very silly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fact that Betsy DeVos would say, well, these are the people I need to meet with to get their input.
So we have the group of sexual assault survivors who have formed this organization to make colleges aware. If you haven't seen the movie The Hunting Ground,
mm-hmm.
documentary on Netflix, watch it. It'll tell you everything you need to know. Those people, very serious people. And then we have this guy and his cronies who think that women putting on makeup is sexual assault to men. Those are the two sides that Betsy DeVos would like to talk about when referring to Title IX and the enforcement of Title IX on college campuses.
Right.
That's appalling.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I don't mean to laugh. It's just so idiotic and laughable, even though it's not funny at all.
It's awful. And so one of the things that I think we should talk about, because it's the nuance of why... I was trying to wrap my head around why the fuck she would meet with these people. Why? What's the point? What are we trying to protect? What are we trying to accomplish? What are we trying to solve that isn't solved, right? What's the argument? And I couldn't wrap my head around
it. Well, it's one of those classic Fox News solutions to a non-existent problem.
Well,
like in the Fox News sphere, there's an epidemic of college-age men that are being falsely accused of rape and having their lives ruined. And it's pervasive and there's so much of it. They don't have a voice.
Right.
And their rights are being trampled upon because Title IX and sexual assault reporting is out of control. And
but,
like, this is the shit they say every day.
Right. But I was trying to dig into where is their argument? Like, what are they pointing to with this Dear Colleague letter? Because that was the thing she attacked, was the letter. And as I was reading it, I found the section that I think they're going to use, that they're going to use it badly. But this is what it says. It's talking about when victims come forward but choose to remain anonymous or want to be confidential and or do not want an investigation to be pursued.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So this goes to the rights of the accused. In the Title IX letter, it says you should do everything possible when a victim comes forward and wishes to remain confidential. You should keep them confidential.
Mm-hmm.
However, you should let the victim know that by their confidentiality, the scope of the investigation is limited.
Sure.
Because you can't accuse someone and not have them know who accused them.
No.
And they go into great detail about, you know, if someone wants to remain confidential or they tell you that they wish that their an investigation not to be pursued, the university still has an obligation to limit that harassment and or assault.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you're not going to formally charge someone with something, it's still the obligation of the university to look into what happened and to try to minimize that harassment or assault in the future.
Sure.
Now, that does not mean this person gets charged. That means literally, like, you have to tell the victim, I can't charge them without you coming forward.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way the law works. However, if this is a person who's been multiply accused and people don't want to come forward, there should be some action taken there. Like they go into like specifics, and they even give examples of if this happens, and you know, here's like some real world examples of what you should do. I think what Betsy DeVos and her cronies are taking that to mean is they're taking that to the extreme, right? They're saying, well, the victim can remain anonymous, but the accused still gets punished, and that's not constitutional, and you know, they're going to flip
it around.
Yeah, that's
part of it.
That's
sure.
part of, I think that when I was trying to read the letter and figure out what was their objection, I think that was the one part that I was like, okay, this is something that they could hold on to. Now, you can misinterpret it in that way. This is not the intent, and this is not what they were
saying. Well, the question is, will the judges that this comes before eventually misinterpret it, or just choose to interpret it their
way? Well, it won't ever go before a judge, because this isn't a law. Title IX is a law, but this Dear Colleague letter was just guidance for universities. And so she can rip the letter up, and it's no longer guidance for universities. To that point, to everyone listening, I would like to just say, no matter what Betsy DeVos does or does not do, Title IX is Title IX. It is a law in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Dear Colleague letter was guidance for universities from the Obama administration on how to apply Title IX effectively.
Right.
That letter can be rescinded, and you still have Title IX.
Yeah, they can still issue a new one.
They can issue whatever they want, but Title IX is a law.
But yeah.
And until you challenge that law and overturn it, it doesn't make any difference what Betsy DeVos says. The law's the law.
Which she might.
What she's doing, well, she can't overturn Title IX. Title IX's a law. Congress would have to overturn it, or a judge, which would take, anyway. What she's doing is more nefarious than that. Right, Title IX still exists. What she's doing is taking away this framework, this guidebook for how to apply it, which, in effect, the law still exists, but makes it much harder for victims to report things,
mm-hmm.
makes it much murkier for universities to know how to handle things that are reported, makes it much murkier for, campus PD to know what to do, makes it murky for everybody. And when things are murky around sexual assault, it's always worse for the victim.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the whole point of this letter. Biden was just trying to say, look, Title IX applies to this, we know, because of this 1998 case. Here are some guidances. Here's some guidelines. Here's what we think that you should do to effectively do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Betsy DeVos is dismantling that because she talked to some fucking men's rights activists, and it's just not fair how often they're falsely accused and, gosh, their lives. I even heard a story on NPR the other day, which made me want to throw the radio out of the car. It was an interview with the Obama administration's person who was in charge of sort of oversight of this stuff. And the NPR person was sort of playing devil's advocate and saying, well, these people that say, you know, there was alcohol involved, and, you know, these people really aren't this,
yeah,
or they really aren't
that.
It's
kind of the problem with NPR. I'll get to that in a second.
And the lady was like, you know, the way boys are raised, you know, they aren't raised to understand consent, and then they get thrown into this college. And this is the Obama administration's person in charge of this. They get thrown into this college environment, and they don't really understand consent, and all of a sudden you have to have a hard yes from a girl, and they didn't know, and they drank too much, and yeah, we shouldn't destroy these boys' lives. And I'm like, wait, what the fuck? No. Literally in the entire interview with this woman and this NPR person, not a single time, not one time in like the 4-minute interview did they mention the victim. Not once. Mm. They talked at length about boys will be boys, and they weren't raised right, and they got thrown into this environment, and we shouldn't ruin their lives, and for the really bad ones maybe, but we should really be lenient. And not at single point in time did they say, and also the victims' lives have been affected, and maybe we should have some justice for them. There was no discussion of the victim at any point in the entire fucking interview. And I was like, ready to burn the world down. This is NPR, not watching Fox News.
This is what happens with NPR sometimes. I love NPR, I'll always listen to NPR, but like we're in this bizarre age where like the right has sort of taken the reins on all this fake news and conspiratorial theory crap that like NPR, the only thing they know is we need to present both sides. So when a jackass right-wing pundit or an Ann Coulter or you know, an asshole rep from Yeehaw, Texas gets up there and says, well, women are witches because they have a Wiccan crystal in their vagina. And then NPR is like, so Congressman so-and-so said that women have a wicking crystal in their vagina. What do you have to say? Do they have a wicking crystal in their vagina?
And you're just like, are they
come on,
like,
NPR.
What are you talking about?
Stop.
No.
Stop.
No, that's not true. You know that's bullshit. Why are you even...
And you
why?
Know you're demeaning the truth even by bringing it up and treating it, but like
but
it's
treating
like,
it like it's a thing. But, no, it's not.
But that's what they... That's their model.
They may as well
model.
Have interviewed the guy who wrote that fucking article.
They will.
They may as well have. They may as well have had him on the air talking about how I'm a sexual assault perpetrator because I wear makeup and have a physical human female body that I walk around in the world in. And it's assaulting men all over the place because they can't fucking help themselves when they see me on the street. I'm a sexual assault perpetrator because I walk around as a fucking woman. That they may as well have him on there. And then they'll have me and I'll be like, or not. That's obviously ridiculous. And they'll be like, well, but he made a good point, though. You do have boobs. Like, no, he didn't make a good point. Yeah. That I have fucking tits.
Yeah, in the era of fake news and Trump and lunacy, it's like the NPR model is kind of obsolete now.
Yeah.
Like, you got to kind of move past. Like, you guys know when something is asinine.
You have to.
Don't give it credence.
You're making yourselves look stupider by doing this. Like, you're taking away your own credibility by interviewing these people and not... looking at reality.
Yeah, when Sebastian Gorka was a thing, they had him on, it seemed like, it probably was only once or twice, it seemed like a dozen times
like
a week.
I agree. I think and it I'm wasn't like, that much, but you and I were like, why are
they
you
giving
airtime to this
guy? And he
it's
just
like,
went on and on and
on. It's like when you talk
on,
like
Black
Lives Matter and then you bring on David Duke. They don't do that.
No,
because it's,
no. Like, that was a line that has been crossed and we don't do that. Like,
but
they'll tell you about
it,
David Duke, but they won't
but they
put a microphone in his face
everything
anymore.
Else.
Yeah.
They do it with gay marriage. They do it with women's rights. They do it with abortion. They do it with sexual assault. There is not two sides to everything.
Yeah.
There's right and there's wrong. And when we're
well,
talking
and there's,
about
there's
sexually,
fact and there's myth, right?
Right. And then we're talking about sexually assaulting women. Let's talk about the sexually assaulted women and their rights before we decide to go on some lengthy philosophical diatribe about maybe men matter. Fuck you. No.
Yeah.
No. These women were assaulted. Their entire lives have been changed. And I don't really give a shit if the basketball guy doesn't get a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
No.
And can I just say how frustrating it is that what we're talking about is school suspensions and you know, school this and school that. Why... the law enforcement community is not brought into this to a greater degree. I was talking to Dana about this when this story ended and I was burning everything down. It seems to me that anytime you have an institution that has an authority structure, law enforcement seems to go out the window. Be that the Catholic Church, universities, mm-hmm. law enforcement, the NFL. Anytime there's a separate authority structure that exists, it seems that law enforcement is no longer something that's put on the table.
Well, the NFL is now trying to overcompensate because of the bad PR, and it's just kind of making it worse.
My question is, remember that guy that punched the girl in the
Ray
elevator?
Rice.
And,
yeah.
Right. Okay, so he got punished by getting...
At first, they suspended him like one game or two games, and there mm-hmm. there was such a backlash to that that they kind of retroactively went back, oh, okay, well, maybe we'll suspend him like six games. And then finally, the league was like, we can't have this guy... playing football in the league, so he kind of got unofficially blackballed.
Okay, my question is,
yeah,
this is in LA, right?
No, he played for Baltimore,
but I think this incident happened in LA.
I thought it happened in Vegas, or I don't remember.
But anyway, the local law enforcement division, whatever it was, LAPD, Nevada, I don't know, got a hold of the tape and sent it to the NFL.
Yeah,
why?
Well, did he get charged with anything locally?
That's exactly what I'm asking you.
I don't remember.
Local police department has evidence of a physical assault in their hand. And rather than arrest the person who committed the assault that they have video evidence of, they sent it to the NFL and his punishment was being suspended for some games and maybe fired.
Okay.
Can I get that deal? How about if I go murder somebody, you catch it on tape and you send it to my boss and be like, maybe you should suspend her. No, that's not how it works. I don't understand. This is what happens, this is my point.
Well, I think in that case, she dropped the charges.
You aren't allowed to drop the charges. That's not a thing. The charges are brought from the state to the accuser. You can choose to not cooperate and not testify, but there's video evidence of the assault, so you don't really need
to. It's still an assault, right?
It's still an assault. I don't give a shit if you're a football player or a janitor or a florist. You punched a woman in the face knocked her out and dragged her out of an elevator, and there's video of it. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit if she wants to prosecute. It's not up to her. It's up to the state.
Right. I think they chose not to based on her testimony.
No, they chose not to because he's a famous person, and the NFL punished him by not letting him play some games.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the Catholic Church. There's physical and a mountain of evidence of sexual assault, and they just let the church handle it. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we moved him around some parishes, and we put him in some counseling, and it's probably fine. Law enforcement. Well, yeah, I mean, he did kill that innocent black man, but, you know, he's suspended for a couple weeks, but it's probably fine. I mean, whenever there's separate institutions of authority, somehow law enforcement doesn't take effect, and I don't understand why that is. If a crime
they get very organized when a black guy won't stand for the national anthem.
Don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Don't they?
Mm-hmm. They really go into action then.
Yeah. But seriously, law enforcement, why? If you are raped on a campus, what is the requirement that you not just go directly to the city police department?
There is none. But they tell you. See, they
you go
tell
to campus
you, go
PD,
to campus
and
police.
Campus goes to the university, and university covers it up.
Or the university help center hotline, uh-huh. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's my
so
advice.
So I would encourage
anybody,
my kid to go to the local police.
If you are assaulted in any way, or if any crime is committed against you, and you're on a college campus, or you are part of any sort of thing with a separate authority structure, I would encourage you just to go directly to the local law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fuck around with campus security, campus police, any of that.
Yeah.
Go to the cops, tell them what happened, do the rape kit, do the whole thing, and campus policies can sort themselves out later, but a crime has been committed against you, and there's no reason to let anyone cover it up.
Especially if it's an athlete.
Yeah,
at a
definitely
place like
don't do that.
Baylor.
Uh-huh.
Which there are still things coming out about everything that got covered up at Baylor.
Yeah. All right. One last item for today is going to be talking about, I guess we're going to talk about gay marriage for a minute, but it's going to lead into.
Oh, there's news on the Lakewood.
The Satanic Temple, and we're going to talk about some stuff.
On the Lakewood Baker.
Yeah. So, the garbage administration that we're in, Jeff Sessions leading the Justice Department, is siding with the baker who refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple, mm-hmm. Which is interesting because it happens to be in my community, mm-hmm. In my city, Lakewood, Colorado. So this guy, this piece of shit, Jack Phillips, wouldn't bake a cake for Charlie Craig and Dave Mullins because they're gays and he doesn't like that, in 2012. He, you know, based on the Civil Rights Act, it's a public accommodation. You can't discriminate based on these things. He said it was in sincerely held religious belief and he wasn't required to do something that flew against his sincerely held religious belief. So he's going to the Supreme Court. As a side note, Neil Gorsuch's addition to the Supreme Court looks very bad for this case, mm-hmm. Given his, judicial record on religious freedom. He's very likely to side with the baker because elections have consequences. Anyway, the Department of Justice came out on the side of the baker this week, which is really interesting because you want to say, of course they did, because it's the Trump administration and they're the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about it from a legal standpoint, it's stunning because the baker is going against the government,
mm-hmm.
Based on laws that exist.
And the government is taking sides against itself.
Well, yes, exactly. So the baker and the government are at odds because the baker has violated the Constitution.
Right.
And the Trump administration is siding with the baker against itself.
Yeah, so this is where it gets weird.
That's stunning.
But the Trump The Department of Justice can't take itself to the Supreme Court. That's the problem. So I don't exactly know how this is going to get sorted out.
Well, so the government, because it's full of civil servants who have nothing to do with the Trump administration in the Department of Justice, I mean, everybody that works in the Department of Justice is not appointed by Trump. These are public servants who've worked there for years and years. These are mm-hmm. lawyers who've worked there for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
So they're taking this case because they're literally defending the Constitution against the fucking homophobic baker, right? That's the situation. The stunning thing is that the Trump administration, the Department of Justice, basically wrote a friend of the court brief and said, we're kind of on the Baker's side here. Yeah. Against their own attorneys who work for them. It's very, like, unheard of.
It's bizarre and it's convoluted.
It's crazy.
It may not lead to anything. That's the part.
Well, no, it won't. I mean, there's not... It'll go forward. It's just...
Yeah, the department just can't sue itself.
Almost unprecedented that would happen.
Well, like, but if they want to take this far enough, they could... fire everybody.
The only thing that I can think of that's even equivalent that the right just lost their goddamn minds about was Prop 8 in California.
Right.
The Obama administration, rather than take the side of the whatever, just said, we're not going to defend this in court anymore. Like, this is obviously a constitutional violation, Prop 8, which is the thing in California back in 2008 that outlawed gay marriage. Mm-hmm. By the time it got all the way to the Supreme Court, the DOJ just said, we're not going to defend it.
They dropped it, yeah.
We're just not going to defend this law. We just aren't, because it's obviously unconstitutional. And so then the right hired their own lawyer, and then that went through this entire process of, does that person have jurisdiction to handle a case that should be the government defending itself? But anyway, that's the only equivalence that I can find. And they didn't defend or, you know, prosecute something and then also write a thing on the other side. They just said, we're not going to do this.
Yeah.
Right? Which the Trump administration could do. They could just say, we're not going to prosecute this guy.
Yeah.
You know, we're just not going to do it. Now, maybe because there are the two men that he refused to bake the cake for, they can't drop it for him, but they're suing on constitutional grounds. So they have the right to do that.
And they will. Hopefully.
It's just stunning that the government is saying we're with the guy who violated the Constitution. It's crazy. I mean, it really is stunning.
We're with the defendant. Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're with the defendant.
Yeah. That's crazy. On that topic of religious freedom, I would like to talk about what's happening in the state of Missouri.
Quickly, because we're out of time.
Okay. The Satanic Temple,
mm-hmm.
you're familiar with, obviously, because mm-hmm. you know me. They are up on the Supreme Court, September 11th, Missouri Supreme Court.
I like that.
Suing, on behalf of Mary Doe, uh-huh. who attempted to get an abortion in Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And they made her do a 72-hour wait period,
uh-huh.
in addition to giving her anti-abortion propaganda and propaganda about the life of the fetus, which they say violates their sincerely held religious beliefs. Based on the first tenet of Satanism, which is the inviolability of one's own body. So you have total autonomy over one's own body. And I think it's like the third or fourth tenet, which talks about how belief should never supersede science, and how the belief that a human is a human when an egg hits a sperm.
It's the best PR for the reproductive rights, just because it's
got
the... Oh,
God, no, I love it so much. Because this is the thing, though. You and I can talk to her blue in the face and fight and fight and fight about my right to do what I want with my body, but it's just a philosophical argument. If we're going to say that this fucking baker doesn't have to bake a cake for these people because he's a Christian, then you better let some Satanists have abortions.
Well, that's the problem, right? That's the slippery slope where you think you've got... and out, you think you've got an ace in the hole with these, mm-hmm. you know, closely held religious beliefs. Well, yep. I can find a religion that says I don't want to serve white people at my diner.
That's the brilliance of the Satanic Temple.
Right, they're trying to create precedent
been successful so many times.
They have, yeah.
You want to put a Ten Commandments in the fucking courthouse? I'm going to put a Baphomet sculpture directly next to it.
And then the court looks at it and goes, well, they kind of have to.
And they have a church. They've done all the things. They are a sincere church. I have a card. I'm a card-carrying member of the Satanic Temple because they are amazing. And when we talk about these religious freedom battles, they are doing exactly what the Christians are doing to spite them. They're literally using the exact same language and the exact same framework.
Yeah, that is the brilliance of it.
To say, okay, good, you sided with him. I'm using exactly the same framework and language, just the opposite. There's no possible legal way that you can deny it.
Yeah, they keep winning.
It's fucking brilliant.
And then if some podunk judge rejects it, they bring it up the chain and it gets even more press.
Yep. It's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I love them and they're fucking American heroes.
Well, on that note, wish luck to everybody in Florida.
Yes.
Hopefully damage won't be as bad as they're projecting.
Keep yourself safe.
Stay safe, stay safe, stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. Find us on Twitter @irreverentduo. reverendtestimony@gmail.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will talk to you next week.